What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that intersect, confront, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Big Bend Community-Based Care provides quality community-based prevention and intervention services to children and their families in the Big Bend area. They partnership with local providers in the Child Protection Team to provide an improved quality of life for at-risk children and families. Big Bend Community-Based Care partners with several community-based agencies. Children's Home Society is one. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Kathy Donofro. She's from Big Bend Community-Based Care. She's an adoption specialist.
I'm glad to be here. I'm excited about the National Adoption Month.
Well, thanks for coming. Tiana Houston, Children's Home Society. She's adoption supervisor.
Good evening. I'm thankful to be here.
And Mike Watkins, who's always welcome. He's the CEO of Big Bend Community-Based Care.
Thank you, Dr. Hollyfield.
I'm looking forward to having you all sharing this information because it's just invaluable, and I think that folks really need to know the ins and outs. As far as adoptions are concerned, what are the general trends that you all are observing currently?
Well, currently we have several children that are older teens that are looking for forever families. We have large sibling groups that are looking for forever families. And also we have children, some of them have disabilities, that we're looking for adoptive families for so they can have a forever family.
Okay. Is that the case for all of you? Is there anything that you would like to share with as far as that's concerned?
I would agree that our biggest need in the population that of children that we have currently would be our teenagers, and specifically teenagers that may have some disabilities or some behaviors that come along with just their trauma history. And so we're trying to actively recruit for those children to make sure that we can find them the family that fits best for them.
Okay. Comments?
Yes, it's the foster care system traditionally is about children that are a little bit older. And typically when people think of an image of adoption, they think of the babies and adopting a baby. And certainly that occurs in our community on a private basis. But largely the domestic adoption sector that we are out there working with kids and advocating on behalf of those kids are typically tend to be a little older.
How does one get into the foster care community?
Well, in Florida, we have Florida statutes that define what child abuse and neglect is in our state. And we have children that that we come across that are reported by the community. And the state has determined that the child between 0 and 18 cannot remain in their home safely. And under the statute, our obligation is always to try to work with the family to get that child home unless it's an egregious case where the child cannot go back home. So in almost all cases, we are working diligently for kids to go back to a safe environment with either their original family or relatives. And in those rare instances where that doesn't occur, we would be seeking a remedy because, as you know, kids can't wait a year, 2 years, 5 years to and put their childhood on hold. They are only going to be seven once, and they are developing and they are learning every day, and we're there to try to make sure that if they can't go home to their natural families, that they have a viable and safe family they can call their own.
Now, the population that you have identified, particularly Kathy, seems like the population that would be the most difficult to find adoption for. You said older teens.
those who have disabilities. And what was it, large sibling, trying to keep sibling groups together. How do you all accomplish this? What do you do? I mean...
Well, what we start doing is when it's determined that a child is not going to be able to return to their family safely, we start looking for that for that child, young adult, a forever family. We start looking at families that have already been approved to be adopted. We have several avenues for recruitment. We have Wendy's Wonderful Kids is a recruiter. We have Heart Gallery of North Florida.
Well, tell us what these are, briefly, okay, if you can, because the listening audience and I don't know what they are.
Wendy's Wonderful Kid is a program that does recruitment for older teens, and they are with the Dave Thomas Foundation. Okay. And it is actually a grant that Children's Home Society has for a specialized recruiter to search for homes for children. The Heart Gallery, North Florida, there's heart galleries all over the mm-hmm. United States. We have our own heart gallery. We have one in both of the circuits which we serve, with Circuit 2, Circuit 14, which are judicial circuits. Mm-hmm. It's the 12 county areas that we serve with Big Bend Community-Based Care. And we actually have photographers in the Heart Gallery that volunteer their time. We have other partners in the community. We have local civic clubs. We have the media. We have other organizations that come in and help us do recruitment. With the Heart Gallery, what we do is a photographer will come in, donate their time, take a professional picture, not necessarily in a studio, but maybe in the community somewhere. They'll take that picture, and then what'll happen is then we have someone that actually comes in and helps us mount these professionally. And then those photographs, pictures, go all over. Mm. We put them in businesses. We do events. Tiana, what are some of the other ways that we use the Heart Gallery?
We have placed them in the courthouse here mm-hmm. in Leon County so that the people coming in and out of the courthouse can see our children on display and see what we have available. When we are doing our quality parenting training, which is one of the requirements for someone to become a foster and adoptive parent, we present those pictures to those group of people. They're just coming out of the training. They're interested and they're eager to help our community, and we present those pictures to them. Although they can't be, we present them, but we can't recruit mm-hmm. for them until they have an approved home study. But we do, you know, let them see, because as Mr. Watkins stated, when people think adoption, they think that's infant. True. And so we want to be realistic about the children that we have that are available.
And then the other thing that the Heart Gallery really provides is it puts a face on adoption. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easy to think of adoption as an initiative or as a project or as a public service. And at the end of the day, you know, I have two little girls of my own. And these are just little girls and little boys that want to be kids. And they want to have a relationship with a dad or a mom or both. And they want the same things that our kids want. They want to go to art class. They want to go to PE. They want to, you know, go to the candy store. Do some of our kids have challenges? Absolutely. All kids have challenges in matriculating and growing up. But the Heart Gallery does a wonderful job in trying to capture the essence of the individual child that's available for adoption and really conveying through a medium, through that picture, that they are someone that wants to become part of your family. And what we've learned through the adoption process is that I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, where the adoptive parent says, "Don't thank me, I thank you." Because the rewards and the returns that I have received, benefits and blessings for being involved in this child's life far, far outweigh anything that they have had to provide to the child.
Mm-hmm. Numbers, what are we talking about? How many kids are available?
At any given time in the state of Florida, mm-hmm. there's over 800 children that are searching for a forever family. In our area, we have 37 children that don't have an identified home, And those are some of the more of the children that we're recruiting. Another effort that we have that we do recruitment on is at myflorida.com, mm-hmm. where yeah. all of our children are listed that are available for adoption. And there's a bio that explains that child's needs to each individual person. That, and that we have a website where they can call Tiana, or in, if it, the child is from another area, who that person they can contact.
Right. And we know that in our area, North Florida, the 500,000 or so households, there's a place for those 37 children. Mm-hmm. There's a right combination, and there's the right place in their heart for that child, and vice versa. And that's the magic of what we get to do every day, is trying to make that connection for that child and that parent.
What's the criteria for becoming an adoptive parent? What's the process? What do I have to go through if I see someone I'm interested in or listening to this program and I think, wow, that might be something I want to do, but I don't know.
And I would say the first step is picking up the phone to call. I have a unit of six, seven including myself, and any of us are capable of explaining the process to you and to the listeners and informing them.
Can you briefly explain it
yes.
even now?
Yes. I mean, and so the process starts with
picking up the phone
and calling. We do have a mandatory quality parenting training and in different areas across the state of Florida. The training is called different things in mm-hmm. different areas, mm-hmm. But what it boils down to is a parenting training to prepare potential caregivers for dealing with children that have experienced trauma, that have been victims of abuse and neglect, and it prepares them for that. And through that process, it is a 7 to 8 week training process where someone that is certified to train the class, they prepare them. We go over behaviors, we go over sexual abuse history, and how to deal with those things when that child is placed in your home. Once that training is completed, we go forward with the home study process.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are having a very informative discussion on adoption. November is National Adoption Month. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? If you're just tuning in, you're tuning in to 411 Teen. This hour, we are looking at adoptions. November is National Adoption Month. Tiana, I had to interrupt you, and we were talking about the process of this adoption itself. Would you like to continue?
I would. So we have the home study process, and the home study process is to assess your home, to make sure that your home is safe and appropriate for the child.
What kinds of things do you look at when you assess a home? My home might not be that big, so what do I have to have certain square footage? How does that work?
We're not looking for the perfect home. We're looking for a safe home. We're looking for a home that allows a child to have some place to put their belongings, a place to, if they want to decorate the bedroom with things that they like, have mm-hmm. the opportunity to do that. Having a bed for the child, making sure that it's in a safe environment. It doesn't have to be an immaculate home, but we do need it to be safe and appropriate for a child or children that we may be placing in the home. We go through a process. You have an adoption worker who answers any questions that you may have. We go through reference checks because we want to know how the people in your community that you interact with on a daily basis, on a regular basis, how they feel about you becoming an adoptive parent. If you have children that are adults, we look into seeing, mm-hmm. okay, what was their experience with you as a parent when you were rearing them? We also
get... Is there financial criteria? I don't have a lot of money, but I make ends meet, but I don't have a lot of money, but I love kids. I'd love to have someone, you know, share what I have with a child.
And
does
there,
that matter?
There is not a set financial criteria, but you do have to be able to accommodate a child mm-hmm. coming into your home mm-hmm. Is something that we look at because we want to make sure that our children's needs are going to be met.
Some of these kids have challenges, mm-hmm. and we recognize that all kids go through changes as they grow and develop. Are there any resources available? Should I take a child, adopt a child, and then find out 6 months down the road, a year down the road, that they have some major issues that I really cannot financially support? What do I do? I will love the kid, but I can't afford to send them to therapy once a week, and that's what they need.
And for that, we do have a post-adoption program over the state of Florida. When you're adopting a child out of foster care, that is one of the benefits. You have access to post-adoption services for situations like that. You adopt a child and they may not have any current behaviors, but down the line, something may come mm-hmm. up and you do have access to therapists. You have access to referrals and that person follows you until forever, because we are a permanent fixture in your life. So if you need something, there's always the opportunity for our families to call back and get the services that a child may need.
Kathy, you want to share something?
Well, even before we actually place a child in the home, we have what we call adoption maintenance subsidy, where if you adopt a child through the dependency system, through the foster care system, there is a subsidy if you want a subsidy to help to be able to support the special needs. We realize that when we do a home study, we look at your home to make sure that you could take on a child. Mm-hmm. But we realize our children have been through trauma, and there may be things that we're not aware of even when the adoption finalizes. But there is a subsidy. It's $417 a month until the child reaches age 18, not till they graduate from high school, but until they reach age 18. And we also have like an insurance policy where it's a Medicaid, and we have Medicaid providers that the child is eligible for until they're age 18. A lot of our parents want to know, what if they want to go to college? Mm-hmm. College is expensive. You know, I have a really good income, but, you know, I really want them to go to school. How am I going to do it? There is a college tuition exemption program where tuition is paid for. If you adopt a child over the age of 14, whenever the child reaches 18 and wants to go to college, they can actually get Pell Grants because it's not dependent on the parent's income because they're adopted after age 14. And also we have an incentive program for people that are state employees who want to adopt. It's a one-time, you apply for $10,000 if you adopt a special needs child. That the applications haven't gone out for that. It won't be until like March or April.
And so when you look at the combination of these supports, Dr. Hollifield, I think you'll see that from a medical standpoint, from a general financial support standpoint, which $417 a month is $5,000 a year mm-hmm. is the standard. And that can be modified based on if there were some special needs of the child. Ongoing supports from us as a system, you know, if you just need guidance and, you know, this is happening, what should I expect or what can I do? And then, of course, the secondary education tuition waiver for those that go on to college. I can imagine if you were to adopt a 15-year-old and the financial planning, I've been planning for my biological children mm-hmm. since their birth to pay for that event. If you adopt a 15-year-old, obviously the planning window is very short. So this opportunity to have a free tuition at a Florida school is, you know, a significant resource for domestic adoptions.
How long does the process take as far as generally? I know there are always exceptions. There's no cut and dry. But generally, how long does it take to adopt?
Well, once you complete the home study process, and we're required to do home studies on people that we have identified children for first. Mm-hmm. But once you complete the adoptive home study process, then there is the website where you can yourself go and start searching for a child. Once we complete your home study, we realize to thine own self be true is what we tell adoptive parents. Tell us what you feel you can and can't handle in your home to make it a good match. We match our children with our families. We look at the strengths of the families and the needs of the child to ensure that that family has the strengths with our supports to meet that child's needs, because we do realize that some of these children have been through trauma and they're going to require a little bit more because there's times in their life that's really going to be hard for them. But I would say it takes anywhere from 7 to 8 weeks to complete the class and another 3 to 4 months, because when we do an adoptive home study, we're gathering your history. We're gathering your medical condition. What's your house? Do you have the room to accommodate a child? Yeah. We're looking at your financial status to make sure that you're financially stable. We're getting references. We do background clearance, federal, state, and local, to ensure that the child's going to be safe in your home, like Tiana was saying. So there's a lot of things that we do. We also, if you have a child that you have, that birth child that lives with you, we go to the schools. We ask the schools, how's this parent doing? Because the way we look at it is we're giving you a child, and we want to make sure that you have what you need to be able to parent this child.
So Dr. Hollifield, to answer your question, I think it's a several-month process. Each stage is defined pretty well in terms of, you know, how long are the classes, how long are is the paperwork for the home study. So those are pretty easily defined. Then I would say the biggest variable is the matching process, because for both parties, for the parent and for the child, it's critical that we make that I would consider a perfect match in every case. So it's life-changing for both parties. And when we see it, we know it. Tiana and her staff and Kathy Donifro are some of the best in the state, best in the business. And just tonight, Ms. Donifro was working with a young 13-year-old who gave her a list of things that she wants to see in her perfect family. And it's very touching. And whenever you can make that connection work, then, you know, the timelines and the money kind of go to the background.
And we do have a lot of families that, you know, complete the process and they really want to adopt. And I tell adoptive parents, it's kind of like going into labor. You don't ever know when it's going to happen, but it's probably going to happen at the least worst time ever. I mean, I had a family that just happened to, and they cut their vacation short and came home, and they were going on some cruise or something, but they had a child, so they got real excited about that. But the little girl that young lady that Mike was talking about, her name's Elena. I told her that we were coming here and that we were going to do a shout out for Elena. Elena's 13 years old. She really wants a family that supports her, that trusts her. She gave me some things that she likes about herself, too. She likes cats. She's a good artist. She's protective of family and friends. She's very protective of her friends. We know that. Likes gymnastics. She was doing a lot of gymnastics for me in the office. First time I ever met her. She's beautiful, too. And she got the most beautiful gold hair. She likes to write. She thinks French fries are amazing. She loves to eat fries. Cats are adorable. She has blue eyes. She feels like that. She has a lot of self-confidence. She's very pretty, and she says that. And she says that she has natural highlights in her hair. But she'd like a two-parent family. She would like to be the youngest in the family. And she is 13 years old, and her name is Elena. And she does well in school. I mean, a shout out to Elena. We even told her what station and everything to listen to. And it kind of made me feel good because we were coming here. Mm-hmm. And since I don't necessarily do all the recruitment anymore, I think some of the most amazing children that we find adoptive homes for are our teens, because they are the ones who are searching.
In looking at the parents, I think a common image in Western culture is that the family is a heterosexual couple with biological children, and alternative family forms are outside of the norm are often met with resistance. What's your position concerning the family composition of, potential adoptive families? Do they have to be two parents? Can they be the same sex? I mean, you know, that's all in the forefront in the news. So tell us where you stand on that.
Yes, in Florida, we have a very broad definition for adoptive parents, and we're really looking for someone that is committed to that child, that can pass the appropriate background checks you would expect, mm-hmm. That is has a capacity to be a loving caregiver for that child and help them grow and develop and get an education. So we do not have any restrictions that you pointed out around race or sex or sexuality. So we do have families of all makes and composition in the Big Bend area. Uh-huh. And really it's about the fit for me. And when you hear Kathy describing Elena just now, mm-hmm. and I've got an image, I've got two girls myself, so, you know, it's very easy for me to imagine Elena and her twirling about in the office. And, you know, I think if you get in front of one of these children, they have so much to offer. And I just think that for anyone that's inclined to be an adoptive parent and has the capacity to do so, you come across one of our kids, and I think you'll have a hard time going home without them.
What about how do you address issues surrounding the biological parents? I mean, what do you do? How do you handle that?
You know, it kind of depends on each child. Yeah. There is a thing called post-adoption communication where we will work, especially with older children, because the older children, they have a relationship with their biological family. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, every biological family has something positive about them because they brought this child into the world. It may be that mom had beautiful blue eyes. It may be, you know, we try to find something positive with each one of our biological families. And it depends on the child and the family and if the family, because, you know, we have grandmothers, and sometimes grandmothers can't adopt. They're older, and they still want to be part of their lives. And we work with those grandparents, as long as it's safe and the child's best interest, and the adoptive family to maintain that contact. We have some children that have siblings, and they may be adopted by other people, but they're still siblings, mm-hmm. and they still have a right to be together. And so we work with post-adoption communication with those siblings to make sure that they all maintain contact, and as long as it's been in the best interest of the child.
Right. And on each of these cases, Dr. Hollifield, it's by definition, there's a judicial involvement.
Of course.
So the judge is ordering a legal right for that parent and that child to become a family. And in those cases, there has been an absolute clearance, you know, that this child is available for adoption. So there's no undoing it. Mm-hmm. They have to enjoy the same rights as anyone that has rights to their own biological children. It's just that strong. So it's a permanent relationship that's made available to the family when that occurs. And I also would say to you that at the time when that occurs, there is an open discussion with the court about contact with the family and the circumstances associated with that. So that's determined on the front side. That could be modified and loosened as they go forward at the request of the family. But that's really something that's unknown from the beginning.
What about those parents who have severed their parental rights, but later on have gone through whatever changes and would like to initiate a relationship? How is that handled?
There's the adoption reunion registry, so that when a child's 18, a family can contact the registry and they can ask that the registry contact the child or the family to see if they would allow contact if they haven't had contact in the past. And there's also a child, when the child turns 18, they have the right to do that too if they choose to.
Okay. How would you share with us what the type of circumstances where the parental rights may have been severed? And I thought that was a question I had received. I mean, what causes one to sever their parental rights?
Well, probably the ones that we see on TV most would be, you know, someone that did an egregious or horrific thing to the child, and we determine, the state has determined along with the courts, that this child can no longer be in their care ever again for safety reasons. So outside of that, which I have to tell you is extremely rare.
Okay.
That's extremely rare. In the 25 years of my history, an egregious TPR is, you know, one in a thousand, maybe more than that.
Well, when some of the folks here heard we were going to be doing, I was going to do something on adoption, they all started firing all these questions at me.
Right.
And that was one of them.
Right.
And I thought, I better ask it now. Right. You didn't ask about that. So that's why I asked you about, severing.
But more typically, in every domestic dependency adoption, in every case that we adopt, there is a termination of parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's for the protection of the parent and for the child to say that this is not going to be undone arbitrarily or someone's going to waltz back in. So when that legal event occurs, and some people refer to that as TPR for short, termination of parental rights, that sets forth a course where there is a new relationship that is legally bound for the adoptive parent and the adoptive child.
You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I was just talking with Mike Watkins, CEO of Big Bend Community-Based Care. I had to interrupt you, but will you continue, please?
Yes, ma'am. So outside of the, you know, very rare termination of parental rights that are the kind of things that you would see on TV, more typically you have parents that just can't quite get it together. Mm-hmm. And so the court has offered them a case plan. And they may have an issue around addictions or mental health, or maybe they just are choosing a bad relationship over their parenting responsibilities. And at some point in time, if they don't correct those things that place a child in harm's way and have the child return back home, then the courts will put them on notice that we're terminating their parental rights. And that is probably more typical, that there is a marginal issue that relates but still impedes their ability to provide a safe home for the child. Those are probably more typical of the cases that end up with a termination of parental rights and ultimately us seeking adoption.
Well, we've talked about contact. You said they just need to call. But we didn't say where they needed to call, who they needed to call. So can you share with us the necessary information? Somebody's listening. They might want to call. How can they connect? Can they go on the net? What do they do? Where do they go?
Well, for local children, you can definitely reach out to me at Tiana Houston, Tiana.Houston at chsfl.org. We also have the website that Ms. Donofro mentioned previously, the Department of Children and Families website, which is where we present the children that are free and available for adoption. And regarding National Adoption Day, if you search Google National Adoption Day, you'll see websites and different resources throughout the United States for different areas, what the requirements are. If you go on to the Children's Home Society website, there are some details regarding the adoption process and who you can contact. And then really quickly, the Department of Children and Families website also has a list of post-adoption providers and who provides the services for post-adoption. Should you adopt a child out of the foster care system, and it points you in a direction. If you adopt a child here in Tallahassee and you decide to move down to Orlando, there's a post-adoption worker down in Orlando that you could connect with that could help you with getting services for your child if needed.
We also have Adopt U.S. Kids that has all the children in the United States that are available for adoption. And on the Florida website, there's this, for National Adoption Month, 30 Amazing Children. I learned today from Tiana that two of our kids are being featured on that. So that's really a statewide. We sent photos and videos in for all the children, so you can pull that up. That's a special thing for National Adoption Month. And also the Heart Gallery, North Florida, or there's heart galleries all over the United States that you can pull up children on.
And looking and considering adoption, what role does race, culture, ethnicity play? I know at one point the Association of Black Social Workers were supporting that black kids be adopted by black parents. And you see it in a lot of different situations. Looking at race, looking at religion. And I just want to know if those variables, what roles those variables play?
Whenever an adoptive home study is completed, mm-hmm. we ask those questions. Are you willing to make sure the child's culture is considered, their religion is considered? We would never hold up an adoption based on race. It's can you meet that child's needs?
I guess the next concern would be, of course, you want them to be in a supportive, loving family, but what about their identity? And that's always been a concern. And I say that, you know, not putting you all on the spot by any means, but I mean, I think these are valid concerns that people have, okay?
And in part of our classes, mm-hmm. we go over that as far as the quality parenting training classes, too.
And Dr. Holyfield, you bring up a great point. There's a bit of an art to this. It's not perfect, and families aren't perfect. And frankly, if we tried to do that, I think we'd get in a lot more trouble. So it's an ongoing discussion in the matching process. I can only tell you that last year and probably the last 5 or 6 years, we've exceeded 3,000 adoptions statewide. We led the country. The state of Florida has in adoptions each year for any number of years. So we're pretty good at trying to bring those parties together, both the parent and the child. I'd also want to mention to you, you mentioned identity. Under the statute, children, once they are 13 years old, Kathy, yeah. I believe, 12, yeah. once they're 12 years old, they have to consent to adoption. So it really brings the voice of the child mm-hmm. along with whatever advocate that they have in the court process to really weigh in and say, hey, I want to be adopted. This is who I consider to be my family and who I want to be my forever family. And each and every public adoption, they go through that very meticulously and under oath. You know, you understand what's happening today. You want to be part of Mr. and Mrs. Smith's family. Yes, I do. So that usually goes very well mm-hmm. because it's a planned event. But certainly we've had kids that opted not to be adopted for whatever reason because of, you know, the family that's being presented to them.
Usually how long – well, if they – I guess I'm answering my own question because mm-hmm. if they choose not to be adopted, then they would stay – in foster care?
They would stay in foster care. And we have a federal goal of permanency within 12 months. So I already mentioned earlier in the segment that most kids go back home. They're removed from their families, and almost all kids do. But the very small percentage we had mentioned, there's roughly 34, 37 kids in our area on any given day that don't have an identified family that want to be adopted. So it's a very, very small number in our 12-county area, 2 or 3 kids per county. So, again, I think we have a community that is compassionate, that cares for our children and our community. And coming up with, and roughly our 500,000 households is what the marketing statistics show, I think we can find a place for those 37 kids. And while we have 3,000 adoptions every year and we exceed our goal every year and we do all the public relations, I think the true meaning behind National Adoption Awareness Month is to say that, hey, there's still 37 kids. And frankly, if there was one still out there, then it's worth this kind of advocacy and consideration because that child can't wait to grow up.
Right.
They're growing up now in foster care, and they want almost across the board, they want to be part of a family unit. And who do you share your successes with? It's not only the things that you need, you know, the food, shelter, clothing, the education, but when you're successful, and we have some very successful kids, who are you going to share that with? Your family.
Mm-hmm.
Your dreams, your hopes, all of these kids have dreams. Every one of them aspire to be something.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you share that with? Your family and your friends. And that's what they're seeking.
How is the transition handled in that, let's say I see a kid and they're not in the Big Bend area, but they're in Florida, and I think, wow, it looks like a great match. I'd like to, but they're in South Florida, and I'm here in Tallahassee. Now, how does that work?
Once again, you call Tiana.
Okay.
And she can. They have she and her staff can coordinate that for you. If you find a child that you see on the web and you're interested in that child, they can actually contact that area to find out about that child. Now, there's only so much information you can get if you're not an approved adoptive parent.
Right.
But we work with the other areas. If we have the family and they have the child, we learn from them about the child, and they contact us about the family. So we work together. Now, sometimes there's transportation issues, but we do work with other areas on children.
So they have the opportunity to interact and meet, though, even when they're miles. Miles and miles apart.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So that's not an issue at all.
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it may be a struggle because if you are matched with a child from Miami, you know, there's transportation costs. We may have to work on meeting someone halfway. The family may have to go down there and meet with therapists before the child
can be
placed. That's
exactly right. Just how is that transition facilitated?
But we do that every day.
Yes.
So there's kids from North Florida that are adopted all over the state. And there's families in North Florida that are adopting kids from around the state. So that match does occur that way. I'd say more likely than not, it's a local child and a local family.
Mm-hmm.
Usually somebody that has come into contact with that child. Again, kind of the power of Heart Gallery is if you come in contact with these children and see that that's a real kid. Elena's a real kid with very cool things to offer. Then that's usually how it happens through proximity. But we have every day do cross-county kinds of adoptions.
Now that you say that, Elena told me she wanted to be adopted in Miami.
Oh.
She said she went to Miami for the summer and that she would really like – she thinks it's a really cool place and would like to go there and live. So,
all right.
You know, you said
so
that. It just reminded
me. She's Miami bound.
That's what she's told me.
Well, that sounds good. And these last – we only have a few minutes left – tell us a little bit more about National Adoption Month. I mean, are there different activities or events that are going on that people can benefit from coming to participate, learning more information? You know, just for the listening audience, what kinds of things can we do?
We just finished this week an awareness event in both Panama City and Tallahassee courtrooms, and they're sponsored by our circuit judges, where they actually went through 10 families, 11 families, and performed the ceremony, the legal hearing, making these families permanent. It's done with the permission of the families and the children in a very public way. So that we can show others how very cool this is and how meaningful it is. So that's the awareness element of the court events and for National Adoption Awareness Month. And we've gotten considerable media coverage, and we try to use that to open up some minds and some, you know, cause some discussion and questions at dinner tables around North Florida for people to think about adoption in our area. Those are the kinds of events that people are welcome to participate in. Kathy mentioned earlier, I think the name of the program is 30 Great Children.
30 Amazing Children.
30 Amazing Children. So every day in the month of November, if you think of it, kind of open up your calendar, kind of like the Advent calendars where you say the 4th of November or the 8th of November, here's the child of the day. So it's an amazing opportunity to promote some of these children individually to get more exposure to those households out there.
And for the month of November, we hopefully are going to have 40 adoption finalizations in our area alone, which is a high number of children to be adopted.
That's good. We did not talk about the different types of adoption. I know you're talking about domestic adoption, but for the listening audience, is there a difference with open and semi-open and closed adoption? Are those different types of adoptions? That was something that was posed to me, a question, because since we don't have call-ins, I often get questions asked about this, and this. And I just looked down here and thought that was a question that someone had asked me to.
The adoptions that we get involved in are adopted through the dependency system. As Mike was saying earlier, it's children that their parents' rights have been terminated. We don't do private adoptions.
Okay.
We don't do international adoptions. We do have children that their parents' rights have been terminated that were international adoptions. So we do get involved with that piece of it. But and one of the benefits that you have from adopting a child through the dependency system is that you don't have to pay for a home study.
Or an attorney.
We pay all attorney fees.
Oh, okay.
Plus, you know, like I said earlier, there's subsidy available to help. We raise the child to age 18, and if the children have severe handicaps, you know, we can negotiate different things with that. There's also the education piece to help families to be able to want to adopt. We offer a lot. I mean, our children that we have, like I said, we realize they're not babies. They're older children. They have different needs. But we do have a lot of supports and services available for our families.
And the open and closed element, as I understand it, Kathy, is really about the contact by the biological parents. So within, in this case, domestic adoptions through the foster care system, there would be a determination, as I said earlier, along with the court on the front side, as to whether or not there'd be ongoing contact with the biological parents. And that would be more of an open arrangement versus a closed arrangement where there would not be contact.
And it's amazing to me how many of our families are willing to have contact with grandmothers, aunts, uncles.
You read my mind.
And with post-adoption communication that's in our statute now in Chapter 63, you know, we are able to do that, and we're able to actually get it in finalization orders if everybody's in agreement. Bottom line is when you adopt, you become parent.
Mm-hmm.
You make decisions for your child. Mm-hmm. It's not till they're age 18. I have two children myself, and they're 27 and 28. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they still need me. And these children,
exactly.
18 is not going to be the magic age that you automatically adopt, and 18, it's over. As my mother says, it's till the last breath leaves my body. And I think that that's how it is with adoptive parents.
Mm-hmm. In this last minute, again, will you share the contact information for those who may be listening who really want to get more information about the whole adoption process?
Yes. You can reach me at tiana.houston@chs.
Can I ask you to spell all that out?
Sure.
Because, you know, they might think it's T-E-A-T. You know, because, you know, people get confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's tiana.houston@chsfl.org. Or you can reach me at 850-488-0506, extension 2050.
Okay. Any?
I can be reached to Kathy Donofro, Kathy dot Donofro, which is D-O-N-O-F-R-O, at bigbencbc.org.
Okay. Listen, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate you coming. I think the information that you have shared has just been great, and I hope you get all the kids adopted. That's it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.